Good morning and welcome to another edition of Living Better in San Diego, a public service presentation of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. I'm Gary Lee. The Museum of Making Music, located right here in San Diego County, shares the accomplishments and impact of the people who make, sell, and use musical instruments and products. They do this through various exhibits, live music performances, and innovative educational programs. Joining us this morning is Museum of Making Music Manager of Artifacts and Exhibitions, Jonathan Piper, and Marketing Manager, BJ Morgan. Welcome, Jonathan. Welcome, BJ.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Great to have the both of you on the show. It's been a few years since I've had somebody from the Museum of Making Music on the show. Let's start with some background information, if we could.
So the Museum of Making Music, we're up in Carlsbad, really close to Carl Strauss, next to Legoland, up in that vicinity of Carlsbad. We've been there about 18 years now, and so our mission there is to explore the accomplishments and the impact of the music products industry through exhibitions, through programs, and what we try and do is connect our visitors to the music-making experience through live music, through educational programs, and through the visiting the museum itself.
And you're part of what, NAM, right? The National Association of Music Merchants.
Correct. The Museum of Making Music is what we consider ourselves to be a trade association, a trade museum. NAM is a global trade association. They represent all the manufacturers, all the retailers, all the entire ecosystem and cycle of making music, you know, buying instruments, selling instruments, making instruments, how they get from the store to you and I, and then what happens to them after that point. So the museum tells that story from an industry perspective, which is a unique perspective. We're not a hall of fame, and we're not like a celebrity museum. Uh-huh. We're actually a museum of a verb, something that happens to the instruments, something that happens when you get the instruments. What happens when somebody says, I'm going to make this process of making music better? How do I innovate upon an instrument, and what happens beyond that point?
And there's a convention every year, isn't there?
There is. And in fact, if you are a music maker, you're probably well aware of the NAM show that it happens about the third week of January, around that time every year up in Anaheim at the Anaheim Convention Center. And it draws about 90,000 to 100,000 folks there. It's a trade-only, members-only event. So
it's not to the public.
Not for the public, unfortunately. So, if you're inside the industry, if you're a retailer, a manufacturer, or an endorsee, a lot of artists show up and demonstrate the instruments, the new products of the day. If you're a musician, it's like being a kid in a candy store. But it is trade only.
It's the place to be.
Exactly right.
I can imagine. Yeah. Now I read some statistics, which I find pretty interesting about who visits the museum. 8% of your guests identify themselves as professional musicians. 27% play recreationally. 21% used to play, and 35% have never played an instrument before. I am in the used to play category. I've been to the museum. I'm in the used to play. Does this change much over the years?
I don't think it changes over the years. I've been there. I'm not going to date myself, but I've been there quite a while. I have a lot of institutional knowledge from the museum, but it's a museum for everyone. You know, you don't have to be a musician to appreciate the process of making music and what that means in your life. I mean, look at what popular musicians are doing today. They are creating music we listen to, the music that we account for moments in our lives. And being a musician, you just get to experience the museum in a different way.
I think that the really cool thing about the fact that we are the NAM Museum, we were able to tell a story that even professional musicians, you know, might not have, you know, because we are telling the story about the people who are making the instruments, people selling the instruments, people buying the instruments. So, you know, even if you are in music, if you are making music, we're going to give you a story that you either, you know, don't have a lot of knowledge about or have no knowledge about. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who doesn't play music at all, you're going to get the music story, but also the industry story. So, you know, whoever comes in, they can get some kind of new story that they're not exposed to otherwise.
And the both of you are musicians, aren't you?
We can claim to be musicians.
Yeah. Yes.
What do you play?
I'm a drummer and / percussionist.
Okay, Jonathan.
Tuba and jug.
Jug?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I was a huge fan of Jim Queskin and the Jug Band.
Actually, I'm going to be playing with Jim Queskin in February at McCabe's in L.A.
Are you really?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I was a fan of his, and my brother and I, we put together this little, it was just like three of us, we were like in high school, put together a little jug band.
It's a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You guys remember the G-Burns Jug Band? San Diego's, as far as I know, the only professional jug band in San Diego. Got to do a lot of touring, and we hooked up with Jim Queskin, done a couple of shows with him now. I'm going to be reuniting in February.
Oh, neat. I would love to see him.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
great.
He's a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah. Now, is everybody that works at the museum a musician? Because I was looking at the staff photo at the website, and it looked like everybody had an instrument in their hands.
We have a staff band called Gallery 7. Or is it Gallery 6? What's the name of our band?
It's Gallery 7. We have six permanent galleries in the museum, so it's sort of our inside joke that we're Gallery 7.
Oh, okay.
So technically, yes, every staff member played in that band, though I would say we are representative of the same stats that you just mentioned as far as being professional musicians, recreational musicians, yeah. Non-musicians, and folks that used to play. We're in good company at the Museum of Making Music with our staff. It's a great family to work with.
Well, it sounds like it. And so you all have your heart is really in this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's one of the qualities that people notice right away is how passionate we are about being at the museum and how much it drives us.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your live concerts that you have there and your exhibits that you have. But first, let's talk about the education component of the museum.
Right, right. As I mentioned in the mission, one is that the goals that we have is to connect people through education and especially school children. So we have a Music Ventures field trip program, and we bring in several thousand students a year. A lot of the students that we bring in are from Title I schools, which is economically disadvantaged communities.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to subsidize their tours and bring them in for free. The kids get to experience a full STEAM and core curriculum related tour, and then they also get to experience making music themselves through drum circles. And then we also have a station there that talks about the manufacture of an electric guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about the STEAM elements, the science behind it, the technology, the engineering component, the art component, and then the mathematical component of building a guitar on this replica guitar workbench. It's really, really cool, and the kids get a whole different perspective of realizing what it takes to really make music from a manufacturing point of view.
And what are the drum circles?
As a drummer, it's one of my favorite parts. So we have about 200 hand percussion instruments. These are djembes and bongos and congas. And some of our volunteers are trained facilitators, and they conduct these drum circles for the kids. And it's just a ruckus coming out of that room as these kids get to learn beats and percussion and just kinesthetically get to have a hands-on experience with drums.
What's the age group of these kids that are coming on these field trips?
Typically school age. So we start about first grade and then go up to about fourth and fifth grade elementary age students. We do have junior high grade levels that come in and high schoolers that come in too. We have a lot of music groups that come in too, like band and choral groups. And sometimes they will perform in our lobby space just off the spur.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it's always
pretty
a hit.
Cool.
Everybody comes out, you know, from their cubicles, everybody from the museum staff, everybody from the NAM staff. It's kind of like, you know, we're treated to a concert right
yeah.
in the office.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty neat. Yeah. So you're basically introducing music and making of music to kids at an early age, which is very important, I think.
Yeah, and these are kids that may not otherwise have that opportunity. They
right.
may have never seen a piano keyboard or touched a ukulele or a banjo or what have you, all these instruments that we have in the museum, especially our interactive area. We have a hands-on area inside the museum where you can play on a couple dozen hands-on, like, full live instruments there. So this is their opportunity to experience that. And hopefully, you know, we spark some interest.
Right. Now, you also have a couple of programs that connect adults to music-making opportunities. Tell us about those.
Correct. We actually have two programs, North Coast Strings, which is an adult orchestra program, and then the New Horizons Band, which is adult band program. And what these programs offer is an opportunity for folks to play who, you know, maybe they played in elementary school, or maybe they played in junior high and high school, but then after that, you go to college, you get your degree, you have a career, raise a family.
Life gets in the way.
Life gets in the way. And maybe music wasn't a part of that. They had to make decisions, and that was one of the things that they had to abandon.
Right.
And now they have an opportunity in their lives where they can pick that interest back up. So those are folks that used to play. We also offer opportunities for people that have never played. So these are older adults who are retired. They have time. They have interest. They have passion, just like we do, and they want to learn how to play an instrument. It's been a lifelong dream of theirs, and hopefully we're able to give them that chance. So these two groups, the North Coast Strings and the New Horizons Band, offer different channels for which they can do it, if they're interested in violin or cello, or if they're interested in flutes and trumpets. So that's an opportunity for them to experience making music themselves.
And if somebody listening this morning is interested in doing something like that, how would they go about it?
First step is to go to our website and check it out. We have a whole section on our website listed about the educational opportunities the museum offers.
Now, you have concerts at the museum as well, and I have been to a couple of them. It's very intimate, small space for the concert. Tell us, how many people can you hold in that space?
We only can fit about 150 to 160 people in, so that's a sold-out concert for us. When we fill that room to max capacity, we can't fit any more people in there because we just don't have any more chairs to throw out. And it's a great space for listening. One comment we get from the artists all the time is, I really enjoy playing here because the audience is engaging with the music that I am offering them. So it's a reciprocal relationship, and we have a great sound system in there, we have great lighting in there, and it's just a really small, intimate room where people just come to listen to and connect with music.
Yeah, I found that the first concert I went to up there was Alison Brown, who, by the way, is coming back, I understand,
mm-hmm.
next year,
yes.
in January. And it was just fantastic, a great concert. Again, it was so intimate. You're right there with them.
And she's just one example of all the caliber of artists we've been able to host at the Museum of Making Music is just risen over the years. Just last week, we had Jason Marsalis there, one of the Marsalis brothers of the venerable family of jazz.
Right.
So he is one of the youngest brothers, and he plays a mean jazz vibraphone. It was just amazing to see him and the reaction the audience had to his music. We've had Albert Lee there several times.
Yeah, I just
and
noticed
Cindy
that.
Cash Dollar. And Colin Hay from Men at Work years and years and years ago. Recently, just within the past year, we had phenomenal art guitarist Kaki King. And she required us to black out the entire room. So it was pitch black in there.
Oh, really?
And then she projected onto the stark white guitar all of these colorful imageries as she was playing the guitar. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And so those are the types of events we're able to host there. We had, for one of our fundraisers, we do a big gala fundraiser every year to help support our programs at the Museum of Making Music. And one year we were able to bring Graham Nash to the Museum of Making Music. Yeah.
And didn't you just have also, not at the museum, but Herb Alpert and Lanny Hall?
Lanny Hall and Herb Alpert. We actually had two back-to-back benefit events in the month of August, and that was by far an amazing event. We had to host it outside the museum because they needed a bigger stage than we were able to offer.
Yeah, for those
so
two.
we thought about it for about 5 minutes or five seconds and like, yeah, we'll go offsite for this. And then we also had a bluegrass event with the Graskals and Flat Lonesome. And again, that was an amazing event. We still had to host that offsite as well because of the stage needs and the room requirements. But there's some, you know, just amazing artists that have come to the Museum of Making Music and worked with us to help us support these programs that we're moving forward with. Always keep your eye out on our calendar online. We're full through almost May. There's a ton of really great artists and acts coming up, too.
And we're still plugging into the calendar.
Right, and it's still, I mean, it's an amazing job that our live music program manager is doing, lining up these artists. I know one that I'm excited about is Carl Verheyen. And he'll be here January 11th and 12th. So he's playing two back-to-back dates at the museum. And then again, Alison Brown is coming up the weekend after that. And then beginning in February, we have a gentleman named Happy Traum.
Happy.
Yeah, you know Happy.
I've seen him. I saw him actually, I think, last year in San Diego.
Yeah, and so he's coming and he's telling his folk story and playing music at the same time. Great. It's going to be remarkable.
When's he going to be there?
February 2nd.
Okay, I'm putting it down on the calendar. He puts on a great concert. He really does.
Yeah.
And how much does it typically cost for one of these shows?
We try and price our tickets reasonably because we're such a small room and we take care of the artists that come there. We believe in making sure musicians are fairly taken care of and compensated. So we make sure that our ticket prices are fair to our audience members and then are also able to take care of the artists that come in. So normally you'll find a ticket range from anywhere from $20 to, if it's like a higher demand artist, probably about $35, which
That's
is pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And considering parking is free at the Museum of Making Music, I say you're getting a good deal.
Yeah. And people can purchase tickets where? At your website?
On our website, online. You can go and we have an event calendar there. And for every event, you can just click on whatever ticket you'd like to buy and go straight for there. Or you can always call us, too. We have a phone number. If you want to take note, that's 760 304 5844. So that's our ticket line. You can call anytime and we'll take care of that.
And all the money from ticket sales for these concerts goes right back into the museum and the programs. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Especially like for the subsidized tours that we do, any exhibitions that we're producing or other educational content, helping support the adult programs. It goes right back into helping support the Museum of Making Music.
Okay, and another big thing, of course, at the museum, it is a museum, so there are exhibits there. And you right now have the current exhibit that you have is on accordions, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we were talking earlier about the six galleries in the museum. So we have five permanent galleries with instruments, accessories, and storylines, and then we have one gallery devoted to the interactive instruments that BJ was mentioning. And then we have a special exhibition gallery with rotating displays. In the past, we've had, the story of the Dreadnought for the 100th anniversary of the Martin Dreadnought. We've had banjos. Recently, we had harp guitars. We had just closed out an exhibition of Henry Dilt's rock photography. Right now, we're doing accordions, which I know might seem like maybe a bit of a stretch after dreadnoughts and banjos and like the really popular classic instruments of American music, but of course the accordion is kind of seeing kind of a second heyday. A lot of listeners are probably familiar with the accordion getting really big in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and then maybe tailing off a little bit. But we're finding that it's really coming back. And so this exhibition, which is called Accordions: Expanding Voices in the USA, is really looking at just that: how the accordion, the voice of the accordion and accordionists is on the rise again. It's expanding again. We're seeing accordions in folk music, in rock music, in punk, in country western, in Norteño music and Tejano and Conjunto music coming out of the south, the borderlands with Mexico, Zydeco, Cajun music. I mean, it's all over the place. And so our display has 12 accordions that would be in use today, some of them in use by, hotshot accordionists right now. And then we've got stories from 15 accordionists from across the country. Some of them, C.J. Chenier, the crown prince of Zydeco music.
Yeah.
And he contributed one of his personal instruments to the display.
Oh, did he? Nice.
Yeah. René de la Prade, amazing punk Zydeco French folk music performer. One of her instruments is in there, one that she modified to play power chords. We've got all these really cool stories about people doing great things with the accordion.
And if I'm not mistaken, you have a few accordions that people can actually play on?
We sure do. Yeah, if you want to try your hand making some music with the accordion, we have three instruments loaned to us by Hohner, all available to play. There's a how-to video that shows you how to put it on, make a few sounds, and of course take it off again very safely and comfortably.
I did not realize how dangerous it could be to put on an accordion, and I'm so grateful that we have that how-to video there, because I was watching one of our coworkers, try and put it on. I'm like, let's watch the video first, okay? Because I was scared because I tried it out when we first got it and put the exhibition together. I'm like, these are heavier than I thought.
Did you hurt your back?
You can hurt your back. Or you can hurt the instrument. I had no idea. And it's a really cool video, and it just goes, it walks you through the process of, here's the accordion, put it this way, put it this way, it's just so like putting on a backpack, which you don't realize.
There's a way to put it on properly.
There's a way to put it on properly. Yeah.
There sure is. And we do have, the instruments in the exhibition are lighter, than a professional instrument would be. So these are, these are friendly instruments for the vast majority of people. But for sure, if you're used to an acoustic guitar, an accordion is going to be just a little bit heavier than that. Of course, because you do put it on, with those straps, we felt that, we really needed that video to make sure that it's safe for everybody involved, including the instruments.
Yeah, unlike some of our past exhibitions, like the harp guitar, where, a guitar is a pretty ubiquitous instrument where people realize that I'm going to put it on my knee and play
right.
An accordion is not like that at all. It's completely different. So definitely encourage people to come out and experience that. If you've never put on and or played an accordion, this is something
anything,
you need to try.
At least that, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're now moving into the digital age at the museum. You have, if I'm not mistaken, two wide format touchscreen displays that let visitors learn more about the instruments and the players?
Yeah, so this is brand new technology for us anyway. We've been finding that if we put any sort of video in the museum, especially younger visitors will automatically come up and start tapping on it, see what they can make it do. So we said, okay, fine, we'll give in, and we got got some touchscreens, and these are really beautiful, you know, brand new touchscreens, wide format. You walk up to it. BJ actually put together all the software for it. There's a, you know, really beautiful interface where you can tap on an instrument and get more information about the instrument, you know, who made it, when it was made, the kind of music that you might make with it, or you tap on somebody's photograph, you get their bio, you can watch videos of them right on the screen, you know, really high quality video and audio coming out of these kiosks. We're kind of using this as a little prototype phase because we do want to incorporate them in the rest of the museum, you know, because we do want to, it changes the way that you can tell stories, because you can be very flexible about the information that you tell. You can incorporate that multimedia right into the display, and you can make the experience much more tailored to the specific visitor because they can really determine their own experience. It's not just information printed out on a piece of paper. They get to decide, you know, what they're going to consume. So it's a really cool opportunity, and you know, we're planning on incorporating these into the wider exhibition space. So, you know, if you've seen the museum in the past, there's definitely some changes coming up in the pipeline over the next couple of years.
So yeah. Right now, these are just with the accordion?
Just with the accordions, yeah. And again, like I said, it's sort of a prototyping moment for us where we can really understand how people expect to interact with them, what kind of stories they want to get out of them, how long they spend at them, how much video they watch, because we can use all that information to really, you know, hit it out of the park when we bring them into the rest of the museum space.
Yeah, we're using this as a test bed. The screens are super engaging. It's not like you're looking at your television screen, which you have what they call the 16:9 widescreen format. It's about half the size of that, you know, half as tall, twice as wide. So it's a really visually stunning thing when you walk into the room and see this long screen and you're like, I can touch that whole thing? Yeah, go for it. But we really want to see how, you know, people are accessing this, what adjustments need to be made if we're going to do something like this on a larger scale.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we really need to get a lot of data and feedback on this because it's really on the test phase right now. It works well for this type of exhibit, and it really works well for media delivery. So we're really excited about that. But we're going to be learning how our audiences are going to be engaging with this piece of technology.
How they react to it.
Yeah, so it's exciting and scary all at the same time.
Well, I think it's a great idea. And I love the fact, too, just in general, that you can go and that you have instruments there that people can play with.
That's one of the core concepts of the museum. I mean, we want to connect people with that music-making experience, and the best way to do that is let them try those instruments that they, not the ones that they see it on the wall that are historic artifacts,
right,
per se, but we'll have some out, you know, out in front. It's like, these ones are, you know, exactly where the ones you see on in the display cases are coming from. You can try these out.
Right.
Have at it. You know, what sounds can you make? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What's the experience going to be like for you to pick up a guitar or pick up an accordion or what have you?
And that can make a huge difference, you know, if you're thinking about playing an instrument, the fact that you get to do hands-on test with it.
Or even if you already play an instrument.
Right.
Every time we put up a new special exhibition, you know, like I said, I'm a drummer, but like the ukulele exhibition, I want to play ukulele now. I want to play accordion now. Every time we bring in an exhibition, it gives, you know, wherever you are on that spectrum of I play professionally, I play recreationally, I have never played, you will find something that piques that interest, that sparks that desire to, like, can I try this? What can I do with this? Where can I go with this instrument?
So when is the museum open? What are the hours?
So we're open Tuesday through Sunday, open at 10 a.m., close at 5 p.m. every day.
The only day we're closed is on Monday.
Yeah. And select holidays.
And holidays, too.
Christmas Day,
New Year's Day, Thanksgiving Day. So if you try and show up on a major holiday, we probably won't be open.
And what's the cost?
$10 for adults, $7 for students age 4 to 18, and then seniors are $7, and then active military are $7. And then kids age 3 and under, we let in for free. And you can also get in for free if you're a Museum of Making Music member all year long.
And again, just like the concerts, money from ticket sales to get into the museum goes right back into the museum.
Exactly.
And the programs.
Help support our mission.
And how else can somebody help you with your mission aside from going to concerts or going to the museum?
Oh, wow. We have an amazing, amazing volunteer program, and we have amazing volunteers. There's only 7 full-time staff members?
Jesus, is it really only 7?
Is it 7 or 8? I've forgotten. I'm so sorry, all my coworkers.
No, it's 8.
It's 8. Yeah. It's 8. But between the eight of us, we need about 70 people to help out with that because we can't do it alone. And these volunteers, they dedicate their time and energy to helping us out, helping welcome people to the museum, helping give tours, helping with the students, helping restore and maintain instruments and the technology that we introduce on a day-to-day basis there, helping us keep the doors open. And they are an amazing group of people, a passionate group of people, and if you have time and passion and energy, you can always volunteer at the Museum of Making Music. We have plenty to do up there.
And how would somebody go about volunteering? What do they need to do?
Well, we have an interview process. The best place to start, again, is our website, museumofmakingmusic.org. And there is a section up there that says support, and you can find all of the requirements that we need for starting your volunteer adventure.
And are you on social media?
Yes, yes. We have a Facebook page. Museum of Making Music is our handle on Facebook. We have a Twitter account. Museum of MKN, Micken Music, is our Twitter handle because we couldn't have enough characters for the full organization name. We do have a YouTube channel. We have Instagram, too. We have a really great team at NAMM that also helps us out with our social media. They are fantastic, and they keep us vibrant and our content flowing on those channels.
All right. Jonathan and BJ, thank you for being on the show today. I appreciate you coming out. Thank you for all you do to help keep the arts alive in San Diego County through the Museum of Making Music. It's appreciated.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
That concludes another edition of Living Better in San Diego. The opinions expressed on Living Better in San Diego do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. Episodes of Living Better in San Diego are available on this station's website. Until next time, I'm Gary Lee. Have a great week and a Merry Christmas.